Welcome and thank you for visiting the Straight Talk Podcast. We're talking wealth, finance, real estate. We're coming from a tell it like it is, keep it simple, help me understand, and give it to me straight approach. I'm Greg Cowart, a guy who's been working on the front lines of finance and real estate now for 20 years. We're going to help you save money, point you in the right direction, keep it fun, and keep it real. Thanks for joining. Let's roll. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Thank you. Please be seated. Please stop the applause. I'm so glad to be here. Just joking. It's Greg Cowart, and welcome to yet another stimulating episode of the Straight Talk Podcast, where we talk about wealth, real estate, and try to keep it real. We try not to use big terms and just talk to somebody like, just tell me the truth, man. Give it to me straight. So we're so glad you could join us. Thanks for pushing play on your Apple Podcast or on Spotify, where we live. And guess what? The total charge for today's service is zero. It's free. No, it's all about passing it on and good karma. So people have been nice enough to talk to me and teach hard-headed me some of this stuff, so I want to pass it on. Excited about the guest today. You know, we can almost do it like a mystery guest. Anyway, let's do that. You'll be the mystery guest. his name is Michael, and he is really good at money and wealth.
It's very kind.
So you were born rich.
No, I in fact was not. And you still have not made it there yet.
Okay. I know. What does that even mean? You know, rich. All right. So, okay. You know a lot about money and wealth. You weren't born into it. You run a business that makes money?
I do run a business that makes money. Yes.
Okay, good. I that do. Qualifies
yes,
you.
Yes, I
a
do.
A small business? A big business?
It is a small business. We have 5 employees that work with us, all out of Richmond, Virginia, but we work with clients all across the country.
All right. Stockbroker?
Getting warmer for sure.
Minister?
Colder. Although
they seem very wealthy.
In a previous life, I was in ministry, which is a whole other story for another
time. Wow. I'm not going to stop. I got to go there. You studied to be a minister?
I, after college, worked for a nonprofit organization that was a ministry to high school students.
Yeah, you have a good voice, by the way. Dear listener, he looks as good as his voice sounds. Wow.
Dear listener, the check is in the mail for Greg.
No, you got a great radio voice, and you're eating the microphone beautiful. Listener, when you do this, you have to like get uncomfortably close to this big microphone.
It's kind of like a first kiss.
Yeah,
you just got to lean into
you're
it.
Hoping that someone wasn't kissing just, it 15 seconds
just
ago.
Just close your eyes and hope that
all
it's
right,
hope
so
for the
not
best.
A minister who do make a lot of money, but not always. Not a stockbroker. You do run a small business. What do you do?
I am a financial advisor and financial planner, which is similar to a stockbroker, but there's a lot more nuance than that. We help people with stocks,
yeah.
But we help people manage their finances.
Wonderful. How do you become a financial planner?
Well, that is a wonderful question. I will tell you, for me, it is a job that fits my strengths and my skill set so well that I thought everyone should do it. So early in my career, I was referring anyone that I knew to the field. I have learned that we are...
Yeah, don't do that.
We are weird.
Yeah.
We are freaks.
Yeah.
We wake up every morning wondering where the next deal is and how we can go grow our business. But the way that you go about doing this is you have to take a bunch of securities licenses, which are no fun. I hate them. But once you get past them, then you are able to sell products. I started at a large insurance company that I will not name, but I left them 5 years ago to go run my own firm.
Okay. Do you have to go to college to be a financial advisor?
I would say that most firms would require it.
Okay.
I don't believe that it's a necessity by law to go to it, but to get in with a firm, they would probably want a college degree.
So not formally required, but practically they would want to see someone and go through college.
That's right. And you do not have to major in finance. I did not major in finance at all.
I majored in religion.
I did not. I went to JMU. Go Dukes.
Go Dukes.
And I majored in a degree, or I got a degree in a major called social justice.
Okay.
which was just a liberal arts degree.
Yeah.
My family likes to give me a hard time for it, but it's really just another form of an English degree.
All right. So for those who don't know, I am also a JMU grad, which we both know. And that is James Madison University in the western part of the state of Virginia in the Shenandoah Valley, which is a school that's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And now I turn on the TV and we're on the TV, which is kind of cool too.
So, kind of wild because neither one of us chose that school for the sports.
No.
It was not a thing when we were there.
No.
And now it's getting a little name for itself, yeah, which is amazing.
It's larger than some of the big universities in our state. So, okay, so JMU, and did you do something before you were financial advising?
Yeah, I worked for a nonprofit organization that was a religious organization that worked with high school kids. I was working with high school kids outside of Richmond, Virginia, and did that for a couple years and really enjoyed it, but also realized that that was not the career that I wanted to have forever. Mm-hmm. I've always been fascinated with finance. I've always been fascinated with money. From a very young age, my entire family told me that I needed to be in sales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're good with people. Yeah.
I wanted to do that. And I had a really good friend who was working in the industry that said, I think that you'd be a good fit here and come work with us.
Okay. So I was talking with somebody this morning and they were asking me how it's going helping people buy houses. And I was telling them and they go, so you mean the rich are getting richer? And I was like, yeah, it's getting really hard to buy houses, at least in our town,
yeah,
if you don't have a lot of money. Now, if you bought a house 20 years ago, it's worth a lot more, and it's easy to buy a house because you just roll over the money from your house into the next house. And I was talking about money and understanding money being something that's passed down through generations. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about you inherit money. I'm talking about money, learning about how it works, budgeting, mm-hmm. money discipline. Were you raised in a home that had money discipline and talked about finance?
That's such a great question, Greg. I was raised in a home where my mother, who I love dearly, never talks about money, ever. You should never, ever discuss it. And my father, who I also love dearly, was very open about it. And so it was a source of conflict sometimes at the dinner table because he wanted to talk about it.
Black and white.
Yes, yeah. Very black and white. I will tell you, in my experience now, I don't think that she will listen to this podcast, so I can say this. I think that my mom was wrong. Mm-hmm. I think that we should be talking to our children about money.
I do too.
All the time.
Here. Yep.
Now, they don't have to know everything about everything, but I think it's really important for them to understand how the world works, how to budget, how to prepare yourself, how to not overspend, and how to put yourself in a successful situation.
It's pollen time in our town, which means here on the Mid-Atlantic, everything's yellow. And you and I both were just talking. We just came back from trips with our kids and my daughter, 17. And we talked about money more than probably most of the other things. We were gone for a week, just she and me.
Wow.
And you have to talk about money that in a way that's appropriate for the age of the child. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time that at 17, she's to a point where we can really talk about some cool stuff. How old's your son?
He's almost 9.
And talking to him about money is appropriate?
I think so. I do too. I think it's age appropriate.
Yep.
Or an age level that's appropriate. So
yeah.
we this trip, we both went on a trip, as Greg just referenced, and he was really fascinated by money this trip. We were in a foreign country, so it was probably the euro and the currency exchange. Mm-hmm. And maybe that piqued his interest, but he was fascinated with it. And so just had so many questions. And some of the stuff I was able to tell him, you know, buddy, I love you. And one day I'm going to talk to you about that. Right now, you don't need to know about that. Yeah. And you don't need to worry about that. But other things of this is how you make sure that you can go on a trip like this. And this is how you spend on a trip like this. And this is how you protect yourself are all conversations that I try to be very diligent with my son.
Good for you.
To make sure that he has a foundation for money. For whatever reason, it is something that is so important to us as a culture, right? Money causes the world to go around.
Mm-hmm.
But we're so hush-hush about it.
It's bizarre.
Isn't that wild? It's so hush-hush.
Especially as Americans.
Yes.
Because the Europeans may not actually be... Wealth is very different over there, and they're not as focused on it, I find, as the Americans are. But for us to be as money-obsessed as we are and spend like we do...
Yes.
One, our IQ is horrible, and two, we keep it secret.
Yes.
Which is why we're doing this podcast, because I just feel like from the work you do and I do, people just don't know about money.
No, they have no clue. And they make really reckless decisions about it because no one's educated them on it. I'm a huge proponent. We could do five podcasts on this, on why we don't talk about money enough in education, how we should be training our high school students about money, how we should be training our college students about money.
Yeah.
These are all things that are just drive me crazy because we have some of the largest debt in the world.
Yep.
Not just from a country standpoint, from an individual standpoint.
Yep.
Our credit card debt is higher than almost every other country in the world, every developed country. Our savings are some of the lowest that they ever have been. If you look at the average 401k account for a 50-year-old, it'll break your heart.
Scary.
It really will.
And I do. We have 150 people call us a month. I get to see.
Oh, yeah. You see it all the time.
Where's your money? Yes. That's why we're doing this podcast.
Yes, and absolutely.
I just had my 17-year-old go through, and I'm proud to say they do require an economics class.
Good.
And I watched her go through the personal finance, which was great, but not enough.
Yes.
Not for how important it is for the success of your life. And let me add one other thing. Money and knowledge of it has nothing to do with intelligence.
Yes.
Nor social status necessarily. Because you could get the best information if you are in the socioeconomic strata at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
If you and or your support system, your family, read some books. I when I was overseas, I was reading The Richest Man in Babylon.
Oh, is it good? I've been wanting to read that book.
It's great.
Okay, that's good.
I almost read it sitting in a chair almost in half a day.
Really?
And it's basic stuff.
Yeah.
That's what's so great about the parable. It talks about saving 10%.
Yes.
You know, and it talks about being very judicious about the 10% you save. It's beautiful. So I don't think that money's hard.
No.
And I don't think that money is complex. And I don't, but you know, it does require discipline.
I will say that money is simple, but it's not easy.
I love that.
And if you are a parent listening to this, I truly believe that one of the best things you can do for your children is help them understand money. It will save them a world of hurt if you can help them understand the power of money, the allure of money, and how to fight through that to make sure that they're making responsible decisions.
Because the parent is fighting against a slope that's oriented away from them, a culture that spins, spins, and spins. And we need to put safety brakes on our young people as they go out. And by the way, this could be said of 50-year-olds too. It's not like this is a problem of the 17-year-old, the 5-year-old, or the 20-year-old. This is a cultural issue in our country.
Yes. And if I could interject here, I would tell you the amount of money you make does not make you more financially responsible.
Hear, hear. Let's talk about this.
In fact, some of my wealthiest clients who have more money than any of us would know what to do with are some of the most irresponsible people I've ever met with money.
In my business, there is a correlation between higher income and lower credit score.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Isn't that wild?
The people are so busy and think that rules don't apply to them that they may not pay their bills on time. Now, it's not a heavy correlation, but it's probably an equal correlation between someone who makes $50,000 a year and has a credit score and someone that makes $3 million. Because the more you make,
yes,
the more you spend.
Yes. I will tell you, I have two brothers. One of them is still in full-time ministry. He has four children, has a wife, does not make a huge amount of money, and is by far the best budgeter I've ever met in my life and one of the most responsible people with money because he is disciplined with it. And he has taken what he has been given by choice. That was his decision. He's been doing it for 15 years, doing this job. And he has made such a profound impact in his family just by having discipline with money. And I know that you've talked about that in previous podcasts about budgets. Please, please go back and listen to those because it's just so important.
Simple, but not easy.
Yes.
Yeah. I had a grandmother who passed away. She was a secretary for the federal government. And she was a multimillionaire.
That's amazing.
And we didn't even know it. Her son didn't even know it.
Yeah.
She was just disciplined.
Yeah.
And if you put a little away, just like Richest Man in Babylon, go read the book,
mm-hmm,
it adds up.
Yeah. Oh,
so
my gosh.
Let's do financial budget. So you should have a college degree. You've got to be a salesperson. Do you have a salary?
I do not have a salary. I am commission-based. One of the things I will tell you that is if you are looking to get into this world, there is a big shift that's happening in our world right now.
Okay.
When I started, it was cut your teeth, 100% commission, call your friends and family, and then try to call the next level of people and figure out how to pay your bills.
That's how I thought it was.
Yes. That's how I started. There is, in our world, there's in the independent advisor side, there are now companies, we have done this in my own company, that have gotten to a place where their books are healthy and they need help servicing their clients. And so you can come in and get licensed and become a service advisor. You go through all the steps that you got to do to get that, which is all your security licenses, all that sort of stuff. But at the end of it, you don't have to go call a bunch of people.
Huh.
We have a book of business that we need you to work and we need you to take care of. Now, there are pros and cons to every side, right? So right. If you want to go that route, the earnings potential is probably a little bit lower because you're not out there commissioning and cold calling and taking the risks, but you get a guaranteed salary and you get an income and you get benefits and you get to grow with the firm. And then as you learn, then all of a sudden you start learning what it looks like to be a successful advisor, It looks like to bring in new clients, and then you start slowly bringing in those people.
And you know what you're talking about.
Yes. So I have a couple people that work with me, and they do this, and they're amazing at it, and we never make them bring in a list of their friends and family that they need to call, and we don't make them do any of that stuff. We just want them to work with us, to work with our clients, to provide an excellent service, and then as they feel comfortable, they're going to bring in leads for sure.
Mike, I didn't know. I thought it was only the former and not the latter.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that worked. That is a better way of doing it. It doesn't mean the other way is not okay, but the other way keeps good people, I think, out of your business.
Yes.
Because it is such a rocky start, right? I mean,
the weed out process.
how bad is it? I know it's bad.
It's over 90%.
90% of people who wake up and say, I'm going to be a straight commission financial advisor won't be there in 2 years.
Right. Because here's the dirty little secret, and I will not name company names, but the dirty secret is that they will recruit you. They'll give you a really fancy internship while you're in college.
Yep.
They'll bring you in.
Yep.
And they will say, hey, go call all your friends and family. They'll hire you. They say, go call all your friends and family. Okay. Well, you call all your friends and family, and let's say that you were really successful with that, and you brought over $3 million in assets.
Okay.
It's a lot of money, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not enough to live off of as an advisor. And so what happens is that you burn out and then they keep those clients that you brought in.
Of course
they do. And you go find a new job and they've got your business.
Oh my gosh. It's a churn and burn.
It's a turn and burn.
They don't mind the 90% failing.
No.
In fact, it's a business.
They want it. 100%. They want it. So there has been a shift, and it's not, you have to look for it. It's not readily available, but it is out there where there are lots of firms that want to hire good people to come in, be a service advisor, help them grow their business.
I'm so glad to hear it.
Yeah.
You know, you are here. You were so kind as to speak to some of our realtors and clients about a week or two ago, and the feedback was just wonderful, Michael.
Wow.
I mean, everyone was like, I felt so comfortable. He brought up things. He spoke really real, which I think is a real stereotype. That's not positive about your industry, which is, I can't be real. I've got to be a multimillionaire to call one of these guys. And I know some of that is true, but you know, Jesse and I were sitting here, we're in this room doing a podcast talking about questions you should ask. And in our case, it was like questions you should ask a dentist, questions you should ask your plumber, questions you should ask a mortgage lender is how many mortgages have you done?
Right.
Is hiring a financial advisor, is how long you've been in the seat, would that be an appropriate question to ask?
It certainly doesn't hurt because I referenced that 90%.
That's what I was
weed
wondering.
Out rate.
Yeah.
If you have people that have been there over 5 years, it's a pretty good sign that they have some experience and
okay.
They know what they're doing. The bigger question to ask is, and this is what I tell anyone to ask, is are you a fiduciary? A fiduciary, big word for doing what's best for your client. So everyone assumes that all advisors operate under the client's best interest. but they actually don't. There's something called a suitability standard, which is, am I doing what's suitable for Greg?
Okay.
It's very nuanced, right? But if you listen, if I'm acting in your best interest versus if I'm acting in what's suitable for you.
They're different.
They're different.
One's open to interpretation.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And so a fiduciary is obligated to do what's in your best interest. That is what you need to ask 10 times out of 10, because that means that there's no conflicts, that they're not selling you something that maybe not be in your best interest, but it is suitable for you.
Is there a yellow hat people wear or a green button on their shirt? Like, how do I know if someone's a fiduciary?
That is an unfortunate part of who we are, or who we are as an industry, is that there are no fiduciary licenses that are handed to people. So you have to ask them, and then you got to dig in on things like, do you have home team products? That's a big word that we use.
Home team products.
Home team products. What that means is, if you are a financial institution, do you provide your own financial products from your own financial institutions? Let me get even more specific. If you are an institution, do you have your own set of mutual funds that you sell? That firm XYZ has XYZ mutual fund that is in your portfolio. That is always something that is hard for people to see. But when you see that, that means that not only are they making money off of being your advisor, they're making money off of the product that they're selling to you as well.
Is that good?
No, it's not good. It's not good because that presents a conflict of interest. Because if fund XYZ from firm XYZ is underperforming what another fund is doing outside of that firm, then what I want to know is that my advisor is going to get me in the best possible fund.
Regardless of whether it's funded by their own company.
That's exactly
there's
right.
a possible conflict of interest.
That's exactly right. But when you are when your firm has their own funds and their own things that they're selling, I can all but guarantee that you are going to stay in those products even if they're underperforming.
Compensation's higher?
Yes. Yeah, because you're getting comped for the commission that you're paying that advisor. Then you're also getting commissions from those funds.
Could someone be a fiduciary and have home team products? I mean, it sets them up in a contradiction, but the fiduciary nature might keep them at least legally responsible on going on a court of law, putting their right hand up and saying, I did what was in the best interest.
It is possible. I do not want to say that it's not.
Okay, I understand.
I will tell you that it is harder. One of the reasons why I left the company that I was at before was because they were pressuring us to sell the products that they wanted to sell. And we did not believe that those products were in most of our clients' best interest. Some of them for sure. But they weren't in most of our clients' best interest. And they told us regularly behind the scenes, you need to do what is good for the client, but also you need to do what is good for the company.
Which keeps your, you need to keep your job. You need to keep us doing okay.
Right. Yeah,
that's a contradiction at times.
Right. So when you go work with an independent advisor, so the firm I work for, we are independent. We are privately owned. We're not publicly traded. We have no home team products. We don't sell anything that is giving us an extra commission. Our entire job is to work for you, is to work for the client, and that's it.
So if I go, now if I'm listening to this and I'm in Wisconsin, can I call you?
Yes, I have clients from Virginia to Florida to Washington State.
But you're not rich?
No.
But you've been doing this how long?
Almost 15 years.
All right, well, you passed some of the questions I've learned to ask, because I'm supposed to ask you if you've been doing it more than five, because under five, you might not be doing it tomorrow.
That's right.
Also, the longer, the more experience you have, and I'm going to hand you my money.
Yes.
Which I have to work hard for, because I don't know the rules of money as well as you do. It's your job.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you if you're a fiduciary.
Yes.
What does that mean?
That I act in your best interest. That my entire job is to act in Greg's best interest.
But I don't. Could you false advertise fiduciary? It's technically?
Technically, people do.
Okay, you could.
You could. They're starting to crack down on that. They, being the regulators, so the federal government and FINRA, which is a privately regulated firm, are starting to crack down on people claiming to be fiduciaries that are not. Which is good. That's wonderful for us that act as fiduciaries.
But it's almost like as you create yourself within the space, you have to make a decision whether you're going to put that out there.
Yes.
Because it comes with a burden.
Yes. And if you claim to be it and you are not.
Well, you could be sued.
You will get in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
A whole lot of trouble.
All right. So you also have chosen not to work for a big, huge company.
Yes.
Why'd you do that? I mean, you just said, because I don't want to feel nudged to do something that, and I know you're super sweet, kind, ethical, bright, all those good things, but why else, what else is good about working with a smaller, medium-sized financial company?
That's such a wonderful question, Greg. Here's what I will tell you. There are big firms that are wonderful, and there are small firms that are terrible, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So this is not a, you must go work with a firm that is this size.
I appreciate that.
What I will tell you is when you are with a smaller firm that is not, maybe not a brand new, just hung up a shingle, but someone that's been around for a while. My partner's been around for almost 30 years, so we have a good base behind us. The benefit that you get, and it's similar to your world, is that you get someone that really cares about you and takes the time to know you and your story and what makes you tick. And as you referenced, it's your life's work that we're talking about, right? It's your money.
Yeah.
So for years and years and years, you would come in and you would meet with an advisor. An advisor would say, I have this fund and this fund and this fund. Let's invest it in that. And the consumer, the client, has no idea what to ask, right? Because it's really confusing. It's all Greek, sometimes literally Greek. And you would say, okay, that sounds good. Thank you. And then you wouldn't know what to ask. And then a year or 2 years, you would call the advisor and say, man, should we do something different? Or what are you thinking? And they would say, well, I like this fund and this fund. We believe that that is outdated. We believe that that is not how an advisor should be. If I may, I'll give you a quick 30-second snippet of what it would be if someone were to sit across from me.
No, for someone who is, I mean, you've done a really nice job of keeping it simple. And you, I can already tell you, are a great guest for the, Straight Talk podcast, because you talk so straight. Like, I don't feel like this is technical. And your industry has a reputation of talking above people. So you're really gifted in that way. Please.
Yeah.
What is it like if I was to call someone like yourself?
Well, what we're going to do is people come in and they bring in a statement. They say, I have this money. What can you do with it? And I actually tell them, hey, let's take a pause for a second because I want to get to know Greg. Tell me about Greg. Tell me about your family. Tell me about your kids. You just traveled. Do you like to travel? Tell me what your goals are. Tell me about your career. And we build out a financial plan for you for free before we talk about investing money at all. Well, why do we do that? Because we believe that there's no one size fits all to investing. And I want to make a portfolio that is based on Greg's life. Not based on Greg is, listener, if you've never seen him, Greg is a handsome 42-year-old.
Here's 10 bucks. Thank you.
But not Greg's in this age demographic and he has kids that are this old. And so therefore he fits into this model and that's it. Mm. We want to take time to understand who you are because your life could be entirely different and probably is entirely different than the person who's in the exact same demographic as you, but just has a different life. Does that make sense?
Yeah, different goals, different background. Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
And so before we even talk about investing, we tell the client it is our job to show you our value. We're going to show you our value by doing a financial plan. It's going to take 2 to 3 meetings. And some people, that turns them off. And I tell them, I really appreciate you. I hope that you have a great time and good luck finding someone.
Oh, you mean... Okay, yeah. You are also, not only is the client interviewing you, you're interviewing them. You're looking for someone, if you want someone who comes in and they point to 3 different types of investments and you're out in 15 minutes, you're not their guy.
That's exactly right. We want to interview you as well, and we want to make sure that you know that this is really thorough because it's your money. This is your savings. You're entrusting someone to manage your money for you. And that's, we can't control the market, but we want to show you that we care about you.
And you know, what you focus on expands. And one of the things, as I have aged, I cannot believe, I'm huge on goal setting. And actually, I should do it's a strength of mine. The clearer your goals, the more likely you're going to get there. It's nuts.
I tell people when we go to goals, they say, I don't know. Let's, throw this number out there. I tell people we have to be specific. We have to.
Absolutely.
If you can't be specific, then you're not going to be able to get a result. Or it's a result that's made up and it's pulled out of thin air. And I can tell you, yeah, you're fine. Your financial plan works, but it has no specificity to how it actually works for Greg's life. And I'm really just making it up.
And what you're doing is really like vision planning, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Could someone come see you if they're 31?
Absolutely.
But you're asking them what their life looks like at 65. You're not like.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's different.
I always tell people financial planning is an incredible process and an incredible part of the process. It's so important. It's vital. What I tell people is that you are taking a moving target that is 1,000 yards away and you can barely see it. And you are bringing it closer to like 50 yards away. It's still moving, but it's moving slower, and we're putting it into vision. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love it.
And so what we're doing is we can never predict the future. A crystal ball would be wonderful, although I probably wouldn't have a job if we had crystal balls.
Yeah.
But we are trying to help you understand how your money on a financial statement, the number on a financial statement, how it correlates into the life that you live, which is what people want to know. Yes, we can look at the number on the statement and we can say, oh, that's good. It went up this quarter. Or, oh, man, it went down this quarter. But what we really want to know is, how does this actually impact my life? How can I make sure that I can pay for my kids' colleges? How can I make sure that if I pass away, my family's taken care of?
Mm-hmm.
How can I make sure that I'm not – one of the biggest questions I get for clients that are close to retirement is, I don't want to be a burden on my kids. I don't ever want my health to be a burden on my kids. So how do I make sure I have enough money to provide for that? There's so many scenarios that we talk through. We talk through when a client sits across from me, I talk about fears, dreams, goals, wishes, all those things. And I really try to draw it out of them because I want them to, one, I think it's important for them to actually acknowledge their feelings and what they're hoping for, because we squash them so much just as individuals. But two, I want to show them things that they thought were never possible with the right plan and the right strategy. It's actually is very possible.
I mean, it goes back to why I'm so glad that you're pulling people into your industry in a more gentle approach than what had been done in the past. It's such important work. And honestly, for you guys, I mean, like, if my son came up and said, I have a 22-year-old, I want to be a financial advisor, I'd be like, dude, good luck. It's an amazing job, but good luck. But to know there's a smoother path for someone who truly wants to guide, connect, it's almost ministerial work.
It is, yeah. And I love it. And I will tell you, I want to be clear, the old guard, so to speak, of churn and burn is still very alive and active.
Sure, sure.
So be careful when you go interview for it. If you want to go find this job, be careful. Don't think that, oh, well, I listened to this podcast with this guy who said that they do something different. Most firms still do the churn and burn.
Yeah.
But there is a trend and there is a move going away from that.
For you to be a commissioned person, I think the average listener, dear listener, I think you know this, that I can't go to Michael and say, hey, I want 3 appointments at 50 minutes each. I have $10.
Right.
I mean, economically, you still have to care for your family.
Right.
And even if you want to help someone with $10, you might want me to demonstrate I have the discipline to save more than $10 before you invest all this time in me. Really, how much money I have, in a way, I'm showing you I am fertile soil for you to plant your time in so we can grow together.
That's right.
Talk to me about, I know it depends upon the age, but I mean, there's probably people who need help but don't need huge consultations.
Right.
So let's start with the beginning. Most basic person isn't ready for a financial advisor. What do they need to do with their money?
So this is a wonderful question. The first thing I would tell you is that if you have, and this is not a small amount of money, so let me be abundantly clear. If you have less than $100,000 to $150,000 of assets that you can invest, I do not think that a financial advisor is going to be acting in your best interest if you go meet with him and they try to put you in something. I really don't. They're going to try and put you in something that is a higher commission product. They're going to make money off of it, and you're never going to really hear from them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trying to get to that level, which again, that is a large amount of money.
But how many people have that amount and have had that experience and have had negative experiences approaching a financial advisor. And really, it's almost like the financial advisor should have told them, I'm not appropriate for you in the first place.
Yeah, I that's a wonderful question. I will answer that with giving you my process.
Yeah, good, good.
If you came to me and you had $25,000 in a retirement account from an old 401k and you didn't know what to do with it, I never screen people on calls, first calls, introduction calls. I never ask referrals to screen people for me. I always take a meeting because I think that people have dignity and they deserve at least one meeting.
Yeah.
In the meeting, I'm going to open the hood, so to speak, and take a look inside and see what you have and ask you some questions to understand where you are. And if you are not in a place financially where I think my services are valuable for you and are worth your time, I'm going to not just tell you, thank you very much, have a great day, call me when you have this money. I'm actually going to give you action steps on how to get to when I want you to call me or when I want you to call any advisor. You don't have to work with me. But I'm going to give you action steps that will then allow you to go home, have a goal, have a strategy, and then come back when you're ready. When it's actually, when paying a fee for someone is worth more it. Valuable for
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Is that how you're paid? You're typically paid either a commission off a product or a fee based upon?
Yeah. So we're paid fees based on the assets that we manage. 99% of my business is fee-based management, which means we charge right around 1% for all assets under management.
Okay.
And we manage.
So it's coming out of what you make, what the asset makes.
That's right. And it comes out of the account. The beautiful thing about that I believe is this is a fiduciary fee, which means you've probably seen some investment advisory firms advertise this online or not online on TV when you're watching basketball or whatever. But the better that you do, the better that we do.
Yeah.
As your revenue goes up, so does ours.
Makes sense.
If you go down, we're going to feel it with you too. And we can't control the market. I'd love it if we could. But we want our clients to know when they come in and they say, hey, what the heck? This dropped a lot. We're going to say,
We feel it too.
We feel it too. Our revenue is down 20% too. It's not fun.
I know. That's the nasty side of what you do is that one, people are trusting you to be right and control things that you don't control. And you, if I'm not right, you win by the long play, by not watching the day-to-day, month-to-month, year-to-year, but by just squirreling away that 10% and watching it slowly grow over time.
I tell people all the time, put the statements in a drawer, don't think about them, go and live the life that you're living. Right now, the last couple of years, the market's been doing really well. Our meetings are pretty fun because we get to give positive news. But a lot of our job and where we earn our stripes is when the market's down and we metaphorically help people off the ledge, say, it's going to be okay. This doesn't affect your life. You're not using this money right now. We are long-term in nature.
Stick with the strategy.
The mistake that you make is when you sell, when you panic sell.
Yeah. What's a number that starts to make sense to engage with a financial advisor in a full service type capacity?
That is such a great question. I would say that there isn't a perfect answer for it. The number that I give people to call me, like I just referenced, go get to this and then call me, and here are the steps to get there, is about $150,000.
Okay.
I think under $150,000, under 60 years old, you can put your money in the S&P 500 and have a wonderful time.
Which we've talked about on the budgeting, listener on the budgeting podcast, we talked about that's a nice, safe place to put money that does well over time.
Absolutely.
And it takes out the need to pay someone to consult you on it. Now, y'all play defense. There's a lot of insurance work you do. There's a lot of wealth planning. There's a lot of making sure if you get hit by a bus tomorrow that everything's taken care of. There's a lot more you do to protect somebody and for their overall financial health than just invest their assets.
That's exactly right. We want to get to know the full story, right? So I don't want to just know how much do you have in assets. I want to know, tell me about your family.
Yeah.
Tell me about your insurance.
Yeah.
We've been really focusing on estate planning recently, how to make sure that your estate plan is properly in order. We're not lawyers, but we connect with lawyers all the time. We're doing tax planning, tax preparation, all that sort of stuff. We believe that if an advisor is not offering you that you are not getting the service that you should be getting.
I agree. Really, I'm surrendering and I'm paying mm-hmm. for an expert to say, protect me in all things financial. You know, draw me a plan that gets me to where I don't even think I can go, which right. is so fun.
Yes.
I mean, because money is so emotional, but to really show someone, no, if you just chop wood every day, look where it gets you. And I love chopping wood because it hurts. I mean, the axe hits, it hurts your hands, and it's a lot of labor. But, you know, you keep doing it, you can get through a huge tree.
Yes.
But more than that, you're also saying, and I'm going to also play defense for you as well as playing offense.
Yes.
And I'm going to help you think about some things you did not think about. I'll give you one example. I have super expensive disability coverage. Mm-hmm. I'm a mountain biker and a road biker. These guys, they get hit by cars like it's going out of style. And I'm also commissioned like you with what I do. So, you know, that's protection that I wouldn't have even known to have done. You wouldn't know that unless you asked me what my hobbies are.
Greg, that's a perfect, perfect segue, or not even segue, to tie it back together to what I was saying at the beginning of this podcast, which is a good advisor is going to take time to get to know you. If you sat down across from me and in the first meeting, I didn't get out of you a major hobby that you do, that can be dangerous, right?
Yeah.
Biking's wonderful, but it can be dangerous, as you just referenced.
Yeah.
Then I'm not doing my job. Because if you were sitting across from me and I started to get to know you and ask you questions and what do you do for work? What's your family like? What do you do for fun? What are your dreams? And at some point you say, well, I'd like to relieve my stress by mountain biking and road biking. For me, an alarm bell will go off in my brain to make sure that you have the right amount of disability coverage.
Yeah.
And I will ask you, I will say, okay, tell me about your disability.
That's right. And I'd be like, what?
Yeah, what's disability? I thought I had it through work.
Yeah.
No, well, you run your own business, so I don't think you
have it through my work. My legs work just fine. I don't view myself as disabled.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. That's exactly right. And it's my job to make sure that you are covered. We had a, in the fiduciary world, because of bad apples in my industry.
Correct.
We had a aversion for a long time about even talking about insurance. Because there were so many negative experiences with insurance salesmen that we never wanted to be associated with that. My partners and I and a couple other friends of mine in the industry, we started talking about it and we said, we're really doing our clients a disservice.
You are.
If we don't make sure that they are properly insured.
Yeah.
And so there was a little bit of a, we don't want to talk about this because it's such a bad connotation to, no, we have to talk about it. And we can actually show them the proper way that it can be communicated.
Yeah.
And to make sure that they're not being sold something they don't need and getting ripped off, but they're being properly insured. So term insurance is a huge thing in our world now. And making sure that people are properly insured. And term insurance is a very low commission product, by the way.
Well, and I believe there's a place for whole.
Yes, 100%.
And, you know, and so I think we can get to meat is bad.
Yes.
Money is bad. A gun is bad. And insurance, like anything else, is something to be educated about. It is a tool used correctly. It's got a perfect place.
Yes.
But yeah, boy, there has been some really insurance salesmen masquerading as financial advisors, correct?
Correct. And again, we did a disservice to our clients. We, myself, as fiduciaries, because we were trying to
not look like that,
avoid that.
Yeah.
And we had clients that were underinsured.
Yeah.
And if you pass away and you are underinsured,
oh gosh.
I don't care how much I don't care how many times you've chopped that tree. Your family is in a mess.
Yeah.
And so part of my job in getting to know you is to make sure not how just to manage your money, but to make sure we use the big buzzword in our world is holistic financial planning. Holistic financial planning includes investments, yes, but it comes nowhere close to stopping there. We want to do insurance. We want to do disability coverage. The benefit of working with an independent, any independent, not just me, is that when it comes to insurance, again, there's no home team products.
You can go wherever you want to go. Whatever's best.
Yeah, we call our insurance wholesaler who has the entire supermarket, and we tell them, this is Greg's story. This is how much coverage he's looking for.
Yeah.
And they send us
7 policies from 7 different companies.
Yeah, he's got a weird eye. Give me insurance people for a guy who has a weird eye. Because I know insurance is weird.
Insurance is wild.
You underwrite it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's my world. Yeah. Well, I have good news and bad news for you. You ready? Which one do you want first?
I usually like to do bad news first and on the good news.
Okay, ready? I'm going to show Michael my running time of how long I've been going. It's at 44 minutes. We try to keep these under 30.
I told Greg I was long-winded in nature.
No, you are not. Sorry, Greg. I love it. Hopefully, listener, you know, shoot me an email, text me. You've got my information. You're talking straight.
Yeah.
You're talking about something really important that's money. And I think you're talking about something that politically is tough, which is a financial advisor.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about what you do, how to interact with you. That's your bad news. Ready for your good news?
I'm ready for the good news.
You're going to be my first repeat person ever. That's right. We're up to episode 12 and you're coming back.
Oh my gosh.
I've got so much more to ask. And the other thing I can do is, you know, within all of people who know you, Michael, I can have them listen and say, what questions didn't get asked?
Please. Yeah.
Because, I mean, whether we go down tactical routes of how to win before I come to you, which is totally what this podcast is about.
Mm-hmm.
Define for me this, explain to me that. There's so much great stuff here, and your approach is so what I'm looking for in someone who does what you do to explain this. So you're coming back.
I would be honored. I will tell you one thing. Thanks for doing what you do. This is a wonderful platform. I love that you are not just concerned about mortgages. You are concerned about the whole being, right? And making sure that people feel loved and cared for and understand different things and different worlds that are incredibly confusing. So,
well, I think you and I made it through a commission field that can bring out the worst in people, in mortgage and in financial advising. And I've got an education counseling background. You come from a real general social science background and have some experience in ministry too. So, you know, and I think that that's okay for the listener to look for people in these industries that can be scary and predatory and look for someone with pure heart, with a background that maybe gives you a better outcome, that they might be the kind of person that you're looking for, and to go have a conversation with a financial advisor and know that this is possible, what you're offering. And if they're not feeling that, give you a call or go find someone where they do feel those warm fuzzies.
100%.
You know, I want the listener to know that if you call a mortgage lender and they say, go to my website and upload documents and I'll send you a pre-approval letter, hang up.
Yes, 100%.
Find someone who's going to ask questions, who's going to guide you through the process, who's going to talk about your goals and build a mortgage that works for you. And you do the same thing too. And whether it's a piano teacher or a minister or a chef, there is a community out there of really caring people who have high standards for themselves and for their care of customers. And, we just got to look a little harder to find them. So
I agree.
So glad you came.
Oh, thank you.
All right.
What a treat.
Who are you?
Yes. My name is Michael Rawls. I am
Rawls.
Good question. It's the Southern draw. Rawls is spelled Rawls. It's like Lou Rawls, just not as talented, sadly.
Michael Rawls.
That's right.
How do you spell Michael?
M-I-C-H-A-E-L.
Okay. And the company you work with?
The company that I work with and I own is called Lumos Wealth. Lumos Wealth Advisors.
I love that. Reminds me of like a light bulb.
That is the goal. That was the whole
Lumos
idea.
Wealth Advisors. If I wanted to call you, can you
If you wanted to call
number?
Me, you can call me on my cell phone. I will give you my cell phone number. 804-370-3330. You can also find us on my website at lumoswealth.com. And I don't know, carrier pigeon as well.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful. I mean, we're in a world where I know for me, if someone's like push 9 and wait on hold for 5 minutes and someone will answer, that's not my person. So
no.
I love that you give out your cell phone. I think that's awesome too. We're going to do this all over again. And so appreciate you coming to join.
Thank you, Greg.
Dear listener, this is Greg Cowart, gregcowart.com. Let me know what you thought. Michael's coming back. If you want to have some questions that you want me to be sure we ask the next time, we'll make it a little bit more spitfire kind of round. And man, so appreciate you listening to this. I hope, you know, we're around episode 12. I hope you know more. I hope you feel more empowered. The concept of money doesn't scare you. You know, better questions to ask, better places to start. And if you do, let me know. Really appreciate you listening. Have a great day. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Straight Talk Podcast. I hope it's been time well spent. If you have questions, topics you'd like to see me cover, want to connect, just reach out to me, gregcowart.com. Now go, make it a great day.